And we are pleased to be joined this morning by Idaho's Superintendent of Public Instruction, Debbie Critchfield. Superintendent, welcome. Good to have you with us this morning.
Thank you, and good morning.
Well, first of all, we're in the midst of this campaign season, and it's a flurry of activity, isn't it? It's just crazy right now.
That's a perfect word, flurry, yes.
Yeah, it is. Do you, by the way, I have not seen, do you have an opponent this time, or are you just running unopposed in this primary?
Primary, unopposed, and then two opponents or challengers, candidates, whatever, for the general. So a Democrat and then someone that's has registered Constitution Party.
Okay, so I look at the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and let's just say the truth here that is a little bit hard for some people to hear. Democrats don't do well in statewide races in Idaho, but if there is one race where they may have a fighting chance, it would be in the Superintendent of Public Instruction. I don't want you to denigrate your opponents, and that's not what this question's about, but I would ask you, do you feel like they're formidable, that you're going to have a pretty rigorous campaign through the summer and into the fall?
I always take this type of thing very seriously, partly because I want my record to stand for itself. It's not a gimme to me in any way. I expect, just based on what the Democrat Party chair has said in the state, that this is the one race that they believe that they can get, that they are putting their money, their resources, their fight into the superintendent position. And so I do expect that there's going to be a lot of things out there. And like we see now, we're going to have all kinds of stories and information and pushback on things. Clearly, I'm a Republican and believe that I represent the values of Idahoans. Another element of this, kind of in the Democrat Republican realm, we have a supermajority in the legislature. Who will be in the best position to work with those appropriators and lawmakers? That's going to be, I think that's a part of this question.
Okay, so that let's bring in another dynamic with the political season here. We just had a week or two ago, the IEA issued a vote of no confidence toward the governor because he felt like, especially signing the bill that did away with taxpayer assistance for teachers union activity and all of that. How does that impact your race? Do you think that's going to harm you potentially because you're also a Republican here? Is that the worry?
I don't know that this particular issue, I think it rolls up into a larger issue around whether or not I support teachers. I've worked hard to help teachers, which again, going back to a record, will support that it does. This one particular bill has been something that's been in the works for years. And there's been an effort in different legislative sessions to remove the district as the middleman or the charter as the middleman for union activities. And so I think separating out that, the process and how the business gets done for paying dues compared to actual advocacy and support for educators, I think is something that's got to be separated in the conversation.
So is it a bill you would have signed if you were governor?
Oh, boy. I don't know. This is one of those things where you're the armchair quarterback and it's easy to say what you would have and wouldn't have done. You know, the governor taking a look, I think anyone's got to take a look at being veto proof. Do you want to sign something that you know is going to be overridden? What does that look like? And I think the job of the governor, you know, weighing all those options, I'm going to support him in the fact that he does support teachers and has shown that. And I think his signing was about the business of the union and how he continues to support educators, I hope will rise to the top here.
All right, Superintendent, let's carry on that conversation about what the future looks like in Idaho for education. The downward trend across the nation is that there are less and less kids enrolling in public education. There's a lot of reasons for that. Part of that is the decrease in population. Part of that is other options are available to kids. Idaho is actually holding pretty steady, yet there's been a strong demand for more tax dollars. So my question for you is, are we funding at an appropriate level, in your opinion, as a previous educator? And how do we stay with that steady enrollment and keep the funding available for these public education institutions?
I wish this question were easy. Yes, we are. No, we're not. I've been a part of the funding conversation for more than 10 years now. My conclusion around how we fund schools in 2026 takes in more than just this is enough money, what the state is not sending enough money. Having been in this role over the last 3.5 years and also been in a seat as a local board member where I was juggling what the state sent out, it is very clear to me that the money that we're sending out does not align with the needs that we have for the 21st century classroom. The funding formula was put together in 1994. I'm pretty confident that we all agree that there's a couple of things that have changed about how we deliver education since 1994. And we're trying to make something fit that doesn't fit. And so, yes, part of this conversation is the adequate level of funding, but equal to this conversation, how does it go out and does it meet the needs? We see more supplementals that are failing. People are tired of paying more. There's an expectation that, well, isn't the state paying for education? Why do I keep having to supplement for books and some of these other things? I don't know where we stand moving forward with school bonds, with facilities, and even with the great work that's been done in the last year with the legislature and their school facilities fund. This still is an active conversation. And so part of it is, what is that adequate amount? And if it's not, is it because we're not putting it in the place where it's needed, like special education? We see more online schools. We just see more options at play than anything the 1994 formula could have contemplated back then.
One of the things, and I want to maybe add another dimension to this topic here, we know that House Bill 93 passed last year, also known as the Parental Choice Tax Credit, that it, I think, was kind of emblematic of this school choice desire, that parents just want more options than the traditional K through 12 offerings. To what degree, Superintendent, do you think the emergence of a lot of divisive cultural issues has led to this desire by parents to find another avenue? Maybe they have teachers that are very political in their classrooms, or maybe there's curriculum it's being taught in a certain way that they don't want their kids exposed to that. How much of that has been a factor in the political pressure to create options like was created in House Bill 93?
My experience has told me that yes, there is a part of that, but more broadly speaking, there just are different ways to deliver education. And we see cultural changes that are less about, oh, I think my child's being indoctrinated or this, that, or the other. We see parents who want more flexibility. It's less about the content of what's in the classroom and more about what fits their family. And so I see decisions being made that fall into the preferences that a mom and dad have, along with what works for a child. And 20 years ago, it was everyone goes to public school. And if this wasn't a fit for you, there weren't choices. I'm sorry, we got to make this work for you. Now in 2026 and a few years, you know, before now, there just are more choices. And so part of this, I hate to get too focused on everyone hates public schools, and so that's why they're all fleeing, when I think it is more attitudes in general about examining what the choices around them are, including options within the public school realm. And then parents making decisions that fit for them.
All right. You mentioned that funding model in Idaho. What are some ideas that you have that could be different from 1994? And they could be along like maybe separating out some programs or things like that. What are some ideas that you have on the state level that locally schools could start to implement that would ease that funding pressure?
A couple of things, and I'll start with the idea and the concept was something that I promoted last year. We got it, the legislation got out of the Senate, was held in the House. The year before that, we got it introduced in the House and it didn't go far. We're kind of bringing people along, but focusing less about the overall, here's how we used to do it, kind of the traditional funding models, and looking more at the types of students that we have coming to schools. And so I still am a proponent of the weighted student model, where dollars are attached to the students. That makes sense. If you're getting educated here, you should be receiving the money. And then adjusting it according to certain needs like special education or gifted and talented, alternative schools. There are settings that require more support for that child. And so this kind of one size fits all and then go ask your community to supplement the difference is not sustainable. And when we look at all of the choices that are coming into being, even within that public school realm, we have that same pie and we continue to slice it even thinner. And, you know, I've maintained over the last couple of years, I am 100% a supporter of charter schools. They are public schools in Idaho. That is a different system than in some of the other states. But every time we authorize a charter school, that's a form of deconsolidation. So we're slicing that pie a little bit thinner. And so we must now take a look at how we're delivering education, what's the expectations for parents, and what's available in communities, and then how do we push a model forward that is 5, 10, 15 years in the future.
So when you change that, do you also change the standards? Because if there's a lot of different ways to educate kids, whether it's charter schools or online schools or traditional or whatever, then the standards for graduation or, you know, moving on to the next grade, do those have to be looked at as well?
Yes and no. So there's a statutory process for the review of standards that ultimately gets approval from the legislature. And that is, there's a timeline built into code that standards are reviewed for all of the content areas on a 5-year basis. So we're going to continue to do that. I wouldn't recommend that we alter that or change that. Where we do want to take a look and where my department and, you know, where I like to support locally elected board members is giving them information when they make decisions about the curriculum. So the state determines the what. Those are the standards. The state says this is what we want you to teach. We want you to teach about George Washington. We want our students to know that 1 + 1 = 2. You know, those types of things. The how is what the local district decides. They determine what books they bring into the classroom to teach about George Washington. And so as I travel the state and talk with local board members and superintendents and teachers, one of the pieces of tension that I hear, how come my child is learning it like this? Did the state say we need to learn it like that? No, the state said you're going to learn about George Washington. The local board, district, or charter decides how you learn that. And so connecting districts with quality research-based materials that reflect the value set of the community is one of the most critical roles that a local school board member has in the context of the state setting the standards.
All right. Regionally here, we've had a senator, Senator Cook, who has worked on some AI legislation. I don't think he's had all the success he was hoping for with that. So my question for you is, how do you see AI in the future in Idaho in public education?
Thank you for bringing this up, because I think this has been one of the most misunderstood pieces of legislation to come out of the 2026 session of any that I've talked about. Excuse me. I like your question, where are we going with this? There was a belief that the legislation was requiring or demanding that now AI is in the classroom. No, it's already there. What we're promoting and establishing with this legislation are guide rails and parameters around how, if you are putting this teachers or if it's being used in the classroom, what's age appropriate, how is it best used in any of the content areas. So there, to me, there's two ways of looking at it for the future. One is as a professional tool. So if our teachers are using AI to help them come up with lesson plans or an activity or something to maybe change up a lesson that they've had for a long time, how do you do that in an appropriate way? How do you do that where you're guarding student information? If we're using AI for reports, how are we ensuring that we are not putting any of that personal identifying information into these bots, so to speak? So we need that professional appropriate use side. And then how do we prepare our students for a world going forward that AI, without a doubt, it's already here. We're already using it, smartphones, Alexa, you name it. How do we help them navigate it in ways that they can be critical thinkers, that they're safe in doing it? And this legislation really bundles all of that up together. And we're one of the first states in the nation to get in front of that. And that's something worth being proud of rather than saying, oh, all of a sudden we're just opening the floodgates on AI. No, it's here. We're saying, how do we do this well and managed?
Okay. Our guest this morning is Debbie Critchfield. She is the State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Superintendent, we really appreciate you making time for us this morning, and I'm sure that we'll have you on again as we get closer to the November election.
I would love it. Thank you so much.
All right.